Hi, it's Adam Peacock with another edition of the Fox Football Podcast. We all love a great story, and there's some beauties around in Australian football. This one is right in front of our eyes at Fox Sports with our very own Robbie Slater. Now, way back in 1989, Robbie finally made the move from the NSL, a dream move, over to Europe. Well, so he thought. He left Sydney United to join Belgian giants Anderlecht. And that's just when the problems started. His story of how he got from there to become a club legend at Lens in France is nothing short of remarkable. It involves many factors, including a relationship back here in Australia, which pulled at his heartstrings, a broken down relationship with his club in Belgium because of that relationship back in Australia, a 28-hour journey across continental Europe in a car, and a stroke of fortune in getting a trial at the place which would become his second home. Hope you enjoy this. I've called it The Long Road to Lens. It's quite the remarkable tale.
And it goes. Oh, 2-2! Unbelievable! Eric Partlow!
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Have you seen a more freakish goal in A-League history? Riley McGree with a straight clear!
Here's Aloisi for a place in the
you
World Cup.
For us.
He yeah! scores! Australia have done it!
Robbie, good to see you. Not much happening in terms of news, so we're going to get into this fascinating story, backstory of yours, and it could prove some instructional value for people out there, but especially kids who might be listening about...
Well, it'll tell them what not to do.
What could happen.
What could happen, but yeah, maybe there's a bit. It's a big story, yeah, so...
So I've read parts of this story in your book, but you're going to elaborate in great detail and go through it because it is an amazing tale.
Well, so it depends where we start.
Well, let's start from when you left Australian's shores.
The last day in the car park?
Let's start. You're at Sydney United. You spent two or three seasons
there. Yeah, I was at Sydney United. We'll go back a little bit further because I was 89 when I left. So if we go back to 88, there was a tournament played in Australia called the Gold Cup, Argentina, Brazil.
Charlie Yankos goal.
Yep, and Saudi Arabia played. Eddie Krunčević was back. Andy Pascalides, who worked at SBS at the time, made a tape for me from NSL, like cutting up goals and da-da-da. And I gave a tape to Eddie Krunčević, who was going to pass it on to Pavkovic. Vladi Pavkovic, it was Eddie's manager. So he took my tape back to Eddie's manager. But Andy did a great job, obviously, of cutting that tape because someone was impressed. Anyway, from that, we went to the Olympics where, you know, I was sub and being used as a super sub, inverted commas. I don't know how that worked. We only made the quarterfinals, but anyway.
The Seoul Olympics.
Yeah, the Seoul Olympics. And, that was basically what got me my move. It was 15 minutes against Brazil at the SFS, the Gold Cup final, where apparently I did okay. And anyway, at Sydney United, things weren't going that well that season because, you know, my headspace, I wanted to go overseas and it was taking far too long. But things were about to accelerate.
So you were 24 at this?
About 24? No, 23.
Well, close to 24.
Yeah.
But did you have an agent?
No.
So this was all being done?
Well, there was agents contacting me for years.
Yep.
And nothing ever happened. And Eddie's manager was the one that all made it happen. So Eddie played a big part, which he was going to play a big part in what's going to come very soon. Anyway, that towards sometime in 89, the call came and I was going to Anderlecht. You know, I was on the back page of the Daily Mirror at the time. Tom Anderson broke the story, who was very powerful in those days. And the Daily Mirror was obviously, you know, one of the main papers. The main paper. Anyway, the deal was done with the club. Sydney, it was $100,000, apparently, was the transfer fee for me to go. And anyway, look, I always remember my last game. Or might have been my last. No, it was my last game because I pulled in to Adensa Park and the parking guy was there, as he always was at Adensa Park. Funny guy and, you know, always had a bit of banter with him. And this one was really good because... I pulled in and I said, Ivan, I said, mate, it's a bit, you know, last game today. And he goes, what were you talking about last game? I said, oh, I've signed overseas to go, I'm going to, you know, club overseas, so today's my last game. He goes, you? Where are you going, mate? You're bloody fucking not good enough, mate. Well, you'll be back soon, mate. Where are you going? What are you doing? You going overseas? Nah, mate, you'll be back soon. Schlater. Nah, you're not good enough, mate. Anyway, I deflated. I drove into the car park. And that was quite a funny sort of farewell from Sydney Croatia.
Expect nothing less.
Mind you, the first year it was pretty much as planned as he said it. Anyway, I left.
So that was your last game. Last day at Adenza Park, yeah. Last day in the NSL.
A week later, I was gone.
Yep.
I think it was roughly like that, long time ago.
Off to Belgium, the great adventure.
Yep, the great adventure. It was pre-season, so there you go. So it was must have been June, July. It must have been maybe July, because back in training. Because when I arrived, Anderlecht actually weren't there. They were playing in a tournament, I think, in Germany against Feyenoord. I think it was Dortmund. Anyway, they were away. So I trained with one of the... I think it was the reserve trainer. And anyway... I started training. I was training pretty much on my own with a couple of other guys. I didn't speak the language, but in Belgium, a lot of people spoke English. Anyway, they came back and off I went, started training, and everything was going fantastic. And I remember Ed De Mos, who's Dutch coach at Anderlecht. I remember one day there was a Nigerian, I think it was Nigerian, Stephen Kishi, was a very famous player at Anderlecht, and Anderlecht were a big team in those days. I'm not saying it's not a big club now, but back then it weighed heavy in Europe. You know, I thought I'd been sold to Anderlecht, but I reckon this day it was my trial. Ad De Mos, there was Stephen Kishi. We did it was only about five v five, and it was man marking. So it was strict man marking. De Mos said, you have to stay. That's who you're with, and you don't let him score. You don't let him. And he put Stephen Kishi on me. The man was a giant. He was massive.
Tank.
He was strong and much taller than me. He was centre half. And I reckon that day was a trial because it felt like it. And
how did you know?
Anyway, I remember it was very hot and we trained and I did quite well. And, you know, I wouldn't say I bossed him, Kishi, but I think De Mos was testing me out physically, and I physically stood up. You know, he kicked the shit out of me, basically, Kishi. And he did speak good English. And every time he kicked me, he picked me back up. But I think De Mos was very pleased that, you know, I took what I didn't say anything, didn't moan, which is rare for me. And I remember distinctly one moment he called me over towards the end of the session when we were doing a warm down, and he said, now you're an Anderlecht player. You are now an Anderlecht player. Do you understand this? And I went, I felt like saying, well, I thought I already was. But anyway, and that was it. And I was off and running. I remember then he called me over. Remember we were training maybe a week later. I used to do special training with Oliveira, who was Brazilian, a very good player. Mark de Grazer, Milan Jankovic, who comes into the story very much so later on. And everything started well. And it started going downhill. De Mos, just before the season was about to start, he called me into the physio room. He was getting massaged, and he said, so you know that you're not going to play much. And I said, oh, right. He says, because we have foreigners, and we already have five foreigners. Only so many foreigners can play, but you can play Belgian Cup. We're going to play you a lot in Belgian Cup. And this was sort of, wow.
you didn't know there was a foreigner rule.
Well, not really. I was naive Australian. I had an idea, but and I can't really remember the numbers, but I remember feeling pretty numb after the conversation because me, typical, I'm coming from a country. It's the big fish in the small pond syndrome. And now all of a sudden you're a very small fish.
So just to backtrack slightly before you get going more with the story, there was no one back here because back here at the moment that there seems to be people who, if you talk to the right person, you'll get the right information about what you're walking into.
Yeah.
There was none of that then.
No. I had an idea. I thought, all right, I'm off to go. I knew Anderlecht was a big club. It'd be a challenge. Frankie was doing very well at Bruges. In fact, the year of my disaster there, he was, mate, I don't know if he got player of the year, but he was top goal scorer in the Belgium league. And obviously Eddie
Krantcevic
had been there the year before. He wasn't there. He'd left and signed for Mulhouse in France, which didn't end up going very well for him, but that would happen later. So, you know, I thought, you know, I'm an international. I played for Sydney Croatia, you know. And you think, you know, but the reality hit me behind the eyes. But this is where the story now goes dark. And it's my fault. It wasn't Anderlecht's fault. It wasn't Ad De Mos's fault. It was completely my fault. It was my self-destruct, if you want. Now, to cut this very short, the start of it, I had a girlfriend in Australia. Obviously, when I left, the plan was she would come over once I settled. I settled. She didn't want to come. She said she had a good job, blah, 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 without going too much into that. Mm. And she refused to come. Basically, that was it. Me being a little bit...
emotionally attached.
Emotionally attached. Decided that it was a very good idea to get on to lie to Anderlecht and say, oh, look, I've got some problems. Well, I didn't actually lie. I said, I've got some problems in Australia. I just need to fly home for a week. Wasn't taken very well, but Ademos gave the green light. So off I went. Unsuccessful. Very unsuccessful. Came back. Because of this, my emotional state wasn't good. But completely my fault. I think I was very immature at the time. Mm. Mum and dad weren't happy. Anyway, it drags on. I decided she still wouldn't come. I decided to fly back again. How stupid was that?
Now, for those of you listening who think Robbie Slater is gruff, he's got this gruff exterior, it's abrasive sometimes. Well, you're right, but deep down at the heart of it, I know the real man. He's a big marshmallow inside. He's a big softie. Sure. And this doesn't actually surprise me too much. That he's done a Hartledge, basically. His heart has ruled everything inside the rest of his being. Yes. So you've come back to Australia and tried to talk the girl into it.
So I think it was after Christmas, I think, because I ended up spending up a lot of time with Arnie. I think we watched Days of the Lives pretty much every day. I stayed, mate, it must have been 4 weeks. I refused
to go. What?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was disappointed that, and Arnie...
What was Anderlecht like?
Arnie used to look at me every day and go, what the fuck are you doing here? And basically, that's what happened. I had to go back. I was, and I remember Pavkovic speaking to him on the phone. He said, "Robbie, you've got to come back." Anyway,
just place Pavkovic again. Who is he?
He's my agent.
Your agent?
Yeah.
Based in Australia or over
based in Belgium? Yeah.
Based in Belgium.
Brussels. Yeah.
So he did the deal for you.
Yeah, yeah. He did it.
Tied it all up.
He was Eddie's manager,
and he's going nuts because he's looking bad now.
Yeah.
He's
well,
brought a player
he wasn't one to go nuts, but he made it very clear to me. He said, "If you don't come back, your career's over." Yeah. He said, "It's going to be hard enough." Anyway, I went back. I flew home. I wasn't good. I wasn't in a good state of mind, and I got so drunk. Not on the plane. I got off the plane. I remember I was at Charles de Gaulle. Got the train to Gare du Nord, Paris, and bought my ticket for Brussels to go back to my dingy little apartment. And I met some guys. I met some guys on the train, and I was jet lagged, and I got very, well, I can remember, drunk. By the time I'd got to Brussels, because you drink on the train, and I remember going into my little apartment, which was depressing. It wasn't in the best part of Belgium. Brussels, sorry. It was right in the heart of Brussels, but not in the best quartier, as they say. And it was right next to the major train. If you can picture Central Station in Sydney, it was right next to that. Every time a train went past, which was very often, the chandelier would shake, and it was quite a depressing time. And I remember waking up the next morning in the clothes, and my suitcase was on the bed, and I don't know how I got myself out of that. But I somehow did. I think I had that day, I don't know, I ended up meeting Pavkovic. I remember going the next day for a meeting. I got marched straight into Mikhail Viskurin, who was the chairman, the director of sport.
So you've been away for 4 weeks?
Oh, something like that. It was something ridiculous.
Without permission?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I had permission to go they didn't want me. I'd already been once. Hmm. Anyway... So I get back, and anyway, they marched me straight in. Ademos is sitting there, wouldn't even look at me. And Viskurin was sitting at the end of the table, big long table, and Pavkovic and me are sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, oh, no, this is not going to go. Ademos wouldn't even look at me. Ademos just went straight away, typical Dutch fashion. He said, okay. He said, I don't want this player. He's not training with me, not training with the first team. He can go with the second team, and that's pretty much it. For me, he's nowhere near. He stood up and walked out. And Viskurin looked at me and he said, right. Mm. But anyway, I left and Vladi said, well, you're just going to have to suck it in and do it. And I said, well, I've got no choice, have I? Then was the most, probably 3 months, the most depressing part of my life. It was about to unfold. I somehow managed to kind of still play okay in the reserves for Anderlecht. I was now training with the reserves and the young players.
So they trained 17, 18-year-old Belgian
They trained
kids.
At night.
Yeah.
They trained three times a night in freezing cold.
Hmm.
And I had to do it. And I did it. And I don't know how I did it.
They still paying you at this stage?
Yeah, yeah.
Full freight?
There was now,
the contract,
yeah,
as it was. But they've done their dough on a $100,000 player from the other side of the world, so, that they thought was going to be okay.
I don't know. Look, the things that happened in those days, I don't know how much was paid. I don't know how much went where. I don't know how much.
Really?
Yeah, I can't really remember even how much I got. It probably wasn't as much as I thought, but I know I did send most of it back to Australia, and I didn't have much money at the time. But my training regime, I'd wake up in the morning. I'd walk around Brussels. Coffee shop. I'd wait till the evening when there was training. If there was training, I'd train. Mm. I trained as hard as I could. There's no doubt about that. And I'd come home, get a six pack, drink that, go to bed. That was my routine.
Every day.
Every day. And on the weekend, I'd play. It was always on the Saturday with the, and that's when I'd see some of the first team players who weren't playing involved in the first team. They'd come and play as well.
How depressed did you get?
Oh, very. I was in a world of pain, but I didn't really think. I'm just thinking back now, and years later, when I realised then that I was depressed. But I didn't know it. I don't know how, but I still managed on the Saturday. I played quite well for the reserves. We won the league. The coach really liked me a lot. And I got through to the end of the season with the help of Milan Jankovic, because my girlfriend, believe it or not, decided to fly over right at the end of the season of Anderlecht. Which coincided with a trip to Croatia with Milan Jankovic, who was one of the big players. For people who don't know, he played for Real Madrid, Red Star, was a big, big player. And my girlfriend and her sister came over, which I paid for. And anyway, I introduced the sister to Milan Jankovic, and they're, I think, still together, and they live here in Australia today.
Hang on a minute. I thought you broke up with this girl.
No. We never actually officially broke up. I just decided to leave,
yeah,
and she was still saying no, and then I managed to get her to come when it was too late, probably, and it was going to be too late, but that comes later in the story.
Okay, just back to that dark period, so the 3 months, was there thought of doing something drastic? And I know
No. I never had that dark thoughts. You know what drove me, and this would come out in the months ahead after it all happened. I never went to Pafkin and said, I want to go home. I refused, even though my situation was hopeless and what was about to happen was a miracle. I refused to go home because I knew what would happen if I went home.
You wouldn't be coming back.
I wouldn't be coming back.
You'd be playing in the NSL for
and
the rest
I
of
know,
life.
At that stage, like the parking attendant, a lot of people, because people are like that. And I know there's people within the game back that at that time, we've gone out of here, I told you so.
Mm.
So I was driven by something that I just suffered it.
And that is...
And I know people go, I mean, that was my worst. I know people go through much worse, but in my situation, no friends, don't speak the language, 16,000 miles from home, left all my family and friends. And like I explained to you, it was my fault I was in that situation. My time at Anderlecht, if I had been in a better mindset, in a better situation, could have been a lot different.
Love Ball Slater, ruined it for yourself around the Christmas time period. Just on the fact that you decided to stay and not come back, that's a point that resonates with a lot of stories about the guys who played in the NSL era, especially the guys who played in the 2006 World Cup. They came through and they were that driven to make it over there because they just knew the only option was to come back and play essentially 90% of the clubs. Part-time football.
Well, of course it was. Yeah, 100%. And it's hard to explain, but I just refused to come home. And I know even later parts, you know, people like Lucas. I remember meeting Lucas when I was at West Ham, and he wasn't in a good spot when he first came into the Socceroos. I remember Venables bringing him and Harry
late 90s, he
wasn't in a good spot. He wanted to leave Millwall, which eventually he did, but he stuck it out. Timmy, I think, was the same.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's not all... goes perfect. Certainly, in my sense, it was a miracle that I ended up where I did.
So back to the timeline. So the 3 months, you're basically living by yourself, looking yourself in the mirror every morning going, far out, how did I get to this position? But grit your teeth, playing the reserves, training three nights a week, on your Pat Malone, barely talking to anyone, homesick as hell, I'd imagine, as well. How did you get through it? What was what became the steps back and to be able to claw back?
Don't know.
Don't know.
It was just a miracle. So what happened is they came, the girlfriend and the sister, and it was arranged that Milan Jankovic was going on holiday with Eddie Krunčević, who was formerly of Anderlecht, and we all went on holiday together. And we drove in Milan's blue Mercedes, myself, girlfriend, sister. It's not respect that I just don't want to mention their names out of respect for them.
Sure. Yeah.
And we drove to Belgrade, and that was one hell of a drive.
From Belgium to Belgrade.
We went through Belgium, up through, I think there was a bit of Holland, a little bit of, maybe, I don't know, was it Luxembourg, I think, top of France, Strasbourg, into Germany, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
A long way across Germany into Austria.
Oh, the Alps.
Up into the mountains where one side was Italy and then Yugoslavia, down through Vojvodina.
You're not the most patient type. How are you going on this
drive? I don't know how I did that. And we were going on holidays. Here's my career was fucked. And here's me going on holidays to Croatia.
So at this stage, Anderlecht still don't want a bar of you. So you had another year in prospect of doing this. Playing reserves.
Yeah.
Just on the nose, big style with the first team.
Yeah, I don't think that would have ever... If what didn't happen, I think I would have been gone.
So what happened?
It's quite extraordinary what happened. I remember we went to Belgrade, had a great time there, stayed for a week. Milan had friends there. We drove, this was, you know, a year or so before war broke out. We drove back down through Sarajevo, down through Mostar, to Dubrovnik. We spent time in these, but we didn't stop at Sarajevo. We stopped at Mostar, Dubrovnik. We went across to an island called Korčula. Any Croatians, you know, of that descent listening would know these places very well.
Anyway, on a Kentucky tour is just reminiscing as well. Yeah,
but we were staying at Split at the time. I remember now. I remember. And anyway, I got a phone call through to my room, and it was Vlade Pavkovic, and he said to me,
the agent in Belgium,
and he said to me, "I've got a chance for you. There's a club called Lens in France. He started spieling. You know, this is a big club. You know, they're in the second division, that they shouldn't be. They want to get back in the first division." I had no idea who they were, to be brutally honest. And I was barely listening because it was a beautiful day outside. It was near a beer o'clock from memory. And he said, "But there's one problem." And I said, "Oh, what's that? I sounds good." He says, "You've got to come back now. There's a trial in 4 days' time or 3 days or whatever." I said, "You got to be kidding." I said, "I haven't trained." I said, "Da da da." I said, "Seriously, Vlade, you kidding me? I ain't coming." I said, no. And he said, "You've got to come." I said, I'm not coming.
So this is June 1990.
Yeah, it was at the end of the season. So yeah. I don't know why Lons, and I still don't know to this day why they had that game. But Vlade, I hung up saying, "No, mate, I don't come back. I'm on holiday. I've been depressed for da 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 da, whatever." And I remember coming out of my room. No, I was staying there. And anyway, now later, I remember going to reception and Eddie Krunčević and Milan Jankovic were in the lobby, and they come up to me and I went...
Told them what happened.
I said, "No." And you. This was an hour later. So I think Vlade got on the phone to both of them. And Eddie looked at me and he said, "Mate, you got to go." And Milan says, "Robbie, you must go." They had a big accent. Such a great man. These two, they probably saved my life. Certainly career. And I said, "Don't be stupid, guys." I said, "I don't even train." I said, "I can't go. I don't even know where it is. How am I going to get there?" Milan said, "You're going to take my car." I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "You're going to take my car."
The blue Mercedes.
I think it was in the afternoon. He said, "You'll leave in the morning and you're going to drive back and you're going to do what you got to do." And I went, and it was sort of left there. And then I think come up to me later on. He says, "You got to go." And anyway, I went, "Okay, I'll go." And I went, and I got up the next morning and I got into the blue Mercedes and I drove to Brussels. I had no idea. And they told me, I remember Milan said, "Listen, you've got to go," because I was going back not the way we come, because we come from Belgrade. So I was going straight up the coast.
Yeah.
So I went past Rijeka, blah, 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 back up into the mountains. Ljubljana.
Yeah.
Ljubljana up there, Slovenia, and through Ljubljana up into the passport control, down through Austria to Germany. It took me 28 hours. I didn't stop. No, I didn't stop. I drove straight. I couldn't. I didn't have time. I had to drive straight there because that game, you told me, so I'd wasted that. Not wasted. It was too late to drive. I nearly killed myself.
How did you stay awake?
I don't know. I stopped at servos and drank whatever I did, a couple of bungers.
Before Red Bull?
Yeah, before Red Bull. There was no Red Bull in those days. And I don't know how I did it or made it. And I wasn't angry driving. I think I was focused on just driving and getting there alive, because I swear I nearly died going up the coast of Croatia.
Oh, yeah?
Because Milan said, look, it's the ocean road and it goes along cliffs and stuff. Yeah. And it was rain, like drizzly. It was slippery. And it was dead set. You're driving and it was quite a beautiful road in some ways. But when you're not really, you know, you don't know it, and the cliff was there.
Yeah.
You know, and the ocean was down there.
You're like a mountain goat.
Yeah. And somehow I got through it and I stopped at services and I'd have coffee probably, I don't know, and I drove, and I remember I got back to Brussels. I got back to Brussels in the afternoon, and then the next day we were going to Lens. So that, I remember getting back in the afternoon, walked into the apartment. This was a different apartment. I got a new apartment when the girlfriend moved. Anyway, this was like a studio. It was quite nice, and I just... The World Cup was about to be played, by the way. So this was 1990.
There you go.
And I went to the coffee shop just down the road, walked down there, had about 10 beers and went to bed. Exhausted. And woke up the next morning.
Hungover?
No. Don't know. Can't remember. God. I think I went for a run.
Your secret.
I went for a jog.
Yeah.
I met Pavkovic and we discussed tomorrow's plans, and he told me a little bit about Lens, and I'm going, yeah, right. I thought, how's this going to work?
Hmm.
And anyway, I hung around the rest of that day. And the next morning, we drove to Lens, which took about an hour and 10 minutes from Brussels.
Not the 28 hours from Croatia.
That was an extraordinary drive. But it was, you know, I wasn't going to go. If it wasn't for Eddie and Milan, I would not have gone.
Far out. So you come over. By the way, did the girlfriend stay in Croatia? And you
girl and the sister stayed. They had a great holiday.
Yeah, I bet.
They stayed there for a few weeks. They didn't come back because what was about to happen was about to happen.
Anderlecht were happy for you to go, obviously.
They didn't even know anything. I didn't even think of Anderlecht in all this
story. So you got to Lens.
Pavkovic.
So you just leave it in the hands of your agent.
Agent does everything. And we got into Vladdy's car and he's all bubbly and I can't really remember, but we were driving down and we were going. Anyway, it didn't take long and we drove, and I remember going through the border and Lille was to the right and Lens was 20 kilometres. I remember the sign. And all of a sudden there's these mountains. Looking around, and they were black. And I said, Vladdy, I said, what are they? He said, oh, they're slag heaps. There used to be coal mining here, and Lens was a coal mining town. And he said, they're the remnants of the guy. I said, oh, that's very attractive. And I thought, Jesus, this is great. In fact, it was a public holiday. It was a Monday, I remember now. And the place was deserted. Anyway, we drove into Lens, which wasn't spectacular, especially when there's no one in there. Deserted streets, and we drove around to the Gare du Nord. Train stations had a big part in my life, didn't they? And mate, it was the dustiest area, and it really was at the time. Now you go to Lens, it's beautiful because you got the Eurostar that goes through the TGV and everything. At that stage, the Café Leif was just it was like a shack. It was really run down. It was horrible. And my impressions, I remember saying to Vladdy, I said, you're kidding me, are you? He says, oh, don't, you know, like, and he's, I said, mate, you sure? I've got my bags in the back of his car and I'm ready to play a game. And then there was a brawl in the coffee shop between two people. I don't know. It was just disaster. I said, Vladdy, can we just get out of here? And we went, so we got back in the car, and I remember we weren't far away. We drove about 200 metres down the road, got out of the Café Leif, straight down, there was a big intersection. To the left was a forest. It was like a forest with a road going. It looked really nice, actually. So we went straight across. He goes, and I saw the sign, Stad. So we drove, and we're driving up this lane. It goes for quite a way, and it bends around, and we come up, and I just looked up, and I said to Vladdy, I went, me. And I remember looking at him. This is like yesterday now. I looked at him, I said, you got to be kidding me. This amazing stadium just popped out of nowhere. It was huge. And I'm tingling now when I think of it, because I remember like yesterday. And I looked, and Vladdy smiled. He just grinned. And he looked at me, and I went, okay. And we drove into the car park, and there was a guy there, French guy, didn't speak any English, and I found out later he was the sporting director, Jean-Luc Lamarche, who became a lifelong friend afterwards, after many years. And anyway, he started talking French in with Vladi, and he said, "Oh, look, we've got 15 minutes. The bus is gonna, but you'll go with Vladi. The other players will, a bus will arrive there." Anyway, there was no other players there. There was just a couple of cars, and I said, "Oh, I'm just gonna take a walk." So I walked up, you know, through the car park, and there was an entrance which was open, and I walked in up to this. And I went up the first thing and I looked out into this massive stadium that held 55,000. And it was beautiful. And it was just, and I looked at it and I just had a feel. I just looked at it. And I remember thinking, oh, in my mind, I want to play on this. I want to play here.
So right up until that point, the 28-hour drive, the year before at Anderlecht, you're not really enjoying Europe. And then out of nowhere, in the midst of, as you pointed out, not the most beautiful city in Northern Europe, this oasis, and all of a sudden you felt like you're at home.
I felt, yeah, I just felt like I'd love to play here. That's all well and good, but I had to play a game, and I didn't know who we were playing, and apparently it was a team that had finished well above Lyon's club called Reims, where they make the famous champagne, of course. In English, we'd say Reims. You know, but, and I didn't know it was them. I sort of knew, yeah, they said, okay, yeah, we're playing them, and I thought, dead set that this game, when we got there, I thought this was probably a lower club, Rams, and it was just a game to give a local club a go. I don't know. Anyway, we weren't supposed to win the game, I don't think, given the form of that season. Anyway, for some reason, this game's on. I've never really actually found out why it was on. But I remember driving through the country thinking, oh, here we go. And it took about 20 minutes to get there. So we were following the bus with... No, I think the bus had left with the other players, and we were following La Marche. And it took 20 minutes, and it was pretty you know. And anyway, we got to this ground, and the ground was probably like a Marconi Stadium, you know that kind of ground, like nice little ground, but
small
obviously
stands,
a local
basic
club,
and not the 55,000 stadium just walked
so
into.
So we're playing in this country area, obviously. But what I remember is we started to get close to it, and I just saw all these mad people with red and yellow shirts on and scarves and
so middle of the off stuff. Season.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, no, actually, it wasn't far because I'd find out which I'll tell you in a minute, that it wasn't far from the pre-season. So this was a game that I don't know why it was ever played, but there was all these supporters there, and I looked at Vlad and he goes, "The fans here are very known in France as some of the best supporters in the whole country. There's lots of them and they're crazy and all they think about is football." And I went, "Oh, all right." And I remember there was thousands of them. And to put it into context, probably at this game there was probably 3,000 or 4,000, but in a small ground, it was probably, you know, Marconi Stadium held more than that. It was smaller than that. So, but it was just a sea of yellow and...
It's a great
atmosphere. Sang-Or, which is what their nickname is, which is blood and gold. And I walked into these dusty dressing rooms and I remember Jean-Guy Vollem, who'd be my best man years later at my wedding. He was the first player I met, and he had a beard, and he was the captain, and he was the only one that spoke a little bit of English. And he said, "Your name?" And I said, "Robbie." And he said, "Oh, okay." And the other French players, as typical French players do, just looked at me and looked away. And, you know, you have to think in those days, I'm Australian with red hair. People don't... There was no one there. They only knew a very cultured Eddie Krunčević, you know? Anyway, so we warmed up, and I'm thinking, all right, okay. And the coach, I remember, Arno De Santos, was quite a small man. Fantastic coach, as I was soon to find out in the years ahead, a couple of years ahead. And they sort of pointed to a board, and they pointed to me, and I was to play up front. I was a striker. Then I warmed up. And I warmed up properly, and I just thought, I just still felt pretty strange, but there's a lot of supporters, so I had a bit of a thought, you know, I'm here, I may as well
try
my hardest, which I always did. Whatever situation I was in, I was that kind of, you know, once I got into football, I never gave half, I gave it all. Anyway, we won this game 6-1 and I scored a hat-trick. And I kind of was very good. And you know when you have a good game, but I didn't think it was that big because I didn't know Rams were supposed to beat us, and that, you know, and a lot later I'd find that out. So the crowd were going crazy, and they've run on the field at the end, and they're all running around me, and I'm thinking, what are these people doing? And they're all slapping me, and some of them stunk, God bless them, and some were kissing me, and next minute, a couple of security guards sort of sort of waved them away nicely. And now I remember there's this man striding towards me in a suit, quite a large man, a man who'd become a lifelong friend. I only spoke to him a few months ago and who'd become a very important player in not only Lens, where he was president for a very long, long time, and also in the French Federation as well. He had a lot to do with the FFS. And anyway, strode right up to me with his suit and tie on, looked so out of place, and he looked at me and he said, "Robbie, we want you to play for Lens." And I looked at him and I sort of went, "Oh," and he strode away. That's the last English I ever heard him speak. He was hopeless. I don't know who taught him to say that line, but he said that line. He never spoke English to me ever again.
Who was it?
Gervais Martel, who was the president for Lens and a legend in Lens for a long, long time.
So this happened.
And anyway, I strode back into the dressing room. It's all a bit surreal now. And you know, I knew I'd had a good game, and I thought, oh, maybe something will come up. Anyway, Vladi, I've walked out of this dusty train, and this coach, Arno De Santos, he was sort of looking at me and, you know, looking at me like this and shaking his head. And I'm thinking, okay, what the fuck am I going to do here? Let's just shake my head back. And anyway, I walked out of the dressing room and basically I was leaving, you know, and I saw Vladi, and for some reason he was grinning like a Cheshire cat. And I go, okay, so we sort of walked away, and I had my bag over my shoulder, and we walked 100 metres or whatever into the little street where the car was to drive back to, and we got in the car, and he goes, "They want to sign you." I said, "What?" He says, they want you, and then we're going to come back and sign in a few days' time, if you want. And I just looked at him, and I had this feeling, and I just went, yeah. So we drove back to Brussels. We stopped midway to have something to eat, and he started talking terms already. I was going to earn double. This is what you're going to get, French francs, and you can earn double from in under. And I remember saying to him, "It doesn't matter, Vladi." I said, "Let's just do it. I want to go there." The rest was a bit of a blur, that little period, because I remember talking, you know, obviously to Milan and Eddie and telling them what was happening. I think I had a week to organise some stuff in Brussels, because I remember the World Cup was on. And my routine, I went down there and the World Cup had kicked off. My routine was, because I drive down to Lens, which was only an hour, and I stayed in my apartment, and they put me up in the Centre de Formation, which is basically where the kids go. It's like the apprentices, and that they
say
live
it
there.
Sounds nice, but...
Yeah, but it wasn't. Well, it was, but it was basically for 15, 16, 17 years. So it was basically one, it's probably a little bit like what the AIS was. You know, you get one room, there's one
dorms.
Bed and dorms. It just wasn't me.
No.
And so I barely slept there. Until I found that they put me in a hotel a couple of weeks later. And I used to drive back and I'd watch the World Cup games.
Sweet.
I remember. And
good summer.
Yeah. And from that moment, I was driven.
Yep. Clicked.
Something clicked. I driven. I didn't drink.
Wow.
I didn't drink. For me, the last time
it's
I never
extraordinary.
I think it was the last time I went a few months without a beer. But I was driven and I trained the house down and I became so self-centered in my mission because I think I realized that it was a miracle what happened. It really was. I should never have been there. One, I would never have gone if it wasn't for the guys. I had to drive back. I could have had an ordinary or disastrous game that day, and I had no right. I wasn't a striker. I was a winger, midfielder.
Yeah.
And so many things clicked into place, and I was driven to the point that when my girlfriend came back from the holiday,
it was Croatia.
It was over. Well, I didn't brush it because she stayed, because she had to stay. And I remember arranging the Brussels apartment, and they actually moved, and I moved into a place, a hotel right on the parking overlooking the Stade Bollard, which is very famous, and it was called Espace Bollard, which was Hotel Bollard. So it was quite fitting that I stayed there. And my girlfriend and her sister, they were quite good, very good-looking girls. And they both stayed in my room. And I became firm friends with the concierge who lived at the hotel with his family. They became my family. They're the ones who taught me French. I started with an English-French dictionary, converting English to French, and the last half French to English. And off we started. They used to cook me dinner every night. And I was obsessed, and I didn't want... it was over. But they thought I was around Jean-Paul and Armadin. Jean-Paul always used to smile at me at this period. And I remember years later, I said, "Why would you smiling at me all the time?" because Robbie, everyone thought you were the legend. You had two of the beautifulest girls in your room. Everyone thought this was unbelievable. I said, one was the sister, you idiot. And
they're not that close a family.
No, no, no. And anyway, I was that obsessed that I would get up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, and I would go on the, if I couldn't sleep. Yeah. And it was quite often the case. I was so, I don't know what it was, but I'd get up in the car park and train or juggle a ball in the car park at 3 a.m. for half an hour.
But the point is of this story, and to me it all goes back to that afternoon stroke morning when those two guys convinced you to drive 28 hours back for this trial. So if that doesn't happen, if you stay in Croatia on holiday, you don't move to Lens, you don't have the career that you have, you don't play for Blackburn after having a great career in France with Lens,
where you became a club manager. Don't play against Maradona in Argentina. I don't play for Australia. No,
you don't meet your first wife. You don't have your first two kids.
I don't have my first divorce.
I knew you'd look at it that way.
And it's right. And so if we can fast forward, because if we can fast forward, I had an amazingly successful time. The best years of my playing career were in France.
Yeah.
I had the first year, and I remember we went up an incredible season in second division. We went up. We actually lost the barrage, which is called a playoff for the second. We won the first two, and then we played Toulouse, who were in the position of the barrage in the first division. We actually lost that game. We went on a holiday to Agadir in Morocco, and Nice got retrograded, as they call it in France, on financials, and we were promoted. Anyway, my first couple of years were unbelievable. It was a highlight. It culminated in that game against Argentina. It was those years. But I always remember when I left Lens, the last night, it was the last game, I gave a farewell at halftime. Frank Farina was playing for Lille. Mm. Thank God he didn't see the farewell. He was in the dressing rooms at halftime. I gave a farewell, very emotional, and I said what you just said. I said, I arrived in Lens with nothing, with no hope, and I was leaving with two children, a wife who was Lensoise, which is, she's from Lens, born and bred. I told them I'll always have a tie with here, and I'll always come back, which I always have done when I can. Because I had an offer of a new 3-year deal to stay at Lens, and that would have been easy. But my dream, once England came knocking, my dream, I had to go. But that night, I'm who was going to be my replacement, Marc Vivien Foey. He was coming into Lens, and of course he tragically passed away for Manchester City during a game, and he was hugely popular at Lens at the time. But I remember as everything died down, because the game was played, I think it was a draw, and we're in the players, we used to have dinner at Lens, the players would have dinner with the sponsors and all that. But I remember the last thing I did, because I was leaving for Blackburn the next day driving, is I walked out onto the pitch, and it was pitch black. And I walked out onto the pitch where I'd done all those years ago, where I stood there in that car park before that trial game. And I honestly got down and kissed the ground.
Yeah.
And I thanked it for all that it had given me. And that's how I left Lens.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Fox Football Podcast. We'll be back soon with some more special guests, some more great stories, and a special 3-part series about the time Usain Bolt nearly became a footballer in the A-League.